the Voice America Business Channel.
For Capital Thinking, where we analyze the key policy, political, legal, and business issues that will shape America's future. Live from Washington, D.C., this is your unfiltered tour of the halls of power. Now, here's your host, Kevin O'Neill.
You are looking live. Yes, live. However, just like Beyonce, I will be lip-syncing the entire show today. And for those of you watching at home or our live and studio guests, you might catch my lips moving and not matching my words, but this is Washington, D.C., so of course my lips are moving. Just don't assume I am lying. I am Brett Boyle, sitting in for your regular host, Kevin O'Neill. And I understand Kevin has a big, big day. He's going to be on Oprah's own network today discussing the First Lady's new bangs. Yes, our very own style maven, Kevin O'Neill. The Andre Talley, if you will, of the political world, showing his range. And so we're very proud of Kevin. Welcome to Capital Thinking on a snowy winter's day in the nation's capital. The kind of day that kind of conjures visions of Robert Frost or E. Cumming poem. And like Mr. Frost, we have, well, the woods are lovely, dark, and deep. I have promises and miles to go before I sleep. We've got a great show for you. So buckle up. It's going to be unbelievable. We've got for us in the first segment four guys who are absolutely some of my favorite guests, and because we've read your tweets and emails and phone calls, we know they are your favorite too. Todd Cranford, Vince Verlici, Bob Horn, Steve Gavin, ladies and gentlemen, the boy band or the Beatles of public policy, guys I like to call the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Gentlemen, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to the show.
Happy New Year.
Happy excited to have you guys. It's going to be a we're going to have Todd and Bob on for the second half of the segment. I understand Vince and Steve, you've got to jump off, but let's get started. And I'll throw this question out to the entire group. Guys, the president's speech, his inaugural speech, was labeled evolved, unapologetic by the New York Times. Let's be honest. What were your impressions of the speech? Is he taking on a lot in this second administration? And we will start with our Democrat representation, because to the victor of the spoils, Vince, since you have to get off the show first, let's start with you, buddy.
I wrote a few words down. As you were saying that, I think it was strong. It was unyielding. It was challenging. And frankly, the coverage on this has been that it was a big liberal speech, but I went back and looked at it. And, you know, I mean, if this thing was really a big tilt to the left, you know, I would have expected he would have said, let's end the death penalty and levy a financial transaction tax on Wall Street and cut defense by 50%. We didn't hear any of those things. I think what we didn't hear, though, that made it seem more liberal than it was that he's not interested in compromising. And I think, you know, look, here's a president who's gotten elected twice in a row now of over 51%.
Right.
Pretty big deal in recent history. And I think, you know, he's not going to use the word mandate, because it didn't go well for President Bush in his second term to start it out that way. But I think he feels pretty strong right now.
Good. Steve, your thoughts?
Well, I think I think that it was uncharacteristically hard for a second inaugural speech. I think that Vince
hard
is right.
Hard in what way? Hard to deliver, or hard in terms of the words you chose?
I think in terms of the lack of the olive branch of any kind in the speech. And I think I would go so far as to say even a tad ungracious. I think that it's interesting. Yeah, but Vince is right. The president got over 51% again. But as we've talked about the day on our show right after the election, there's almost 10 million votes less than last time. I think this was a moment where he could soar, but have done so better if he had at least reached out. But I think that so far, since the election, he's proved that he's, what some of us were saying is that it's Obama Unchained, and I think it's going to be a pretty partisan slugfest from here on out.
This is Todd, and I could not disagree more with what Steve just said.
This is shocking, Todd, that you have a difference of opinion. That's why you're on the show. You want to hear it.
I think the president had extended the olive branch for 4 years, and it got him literally squat. He tried to be true to his campaign promises and his goals of the first administration by being fair, by being open, and by trying to be inclusive. And the Republicans snubbed him. And now that he has won a second term, I, for one, was very glad that he has started to take the stance that he has taken and not wait for the Republicans to work with him, because it's been evident for 4 years, and he's just catching on, that they're not going to work with him. And I don't think that it was high-handed for him to either use the language or discuss the issues that he discussed. I think it's a laundry list of things that, in a perfect world, he would like to see done. I don't believe that he is going to try to tackle all of the issues that he has mentioned in the inaugural address, nor will he probably try to tackle everything that he mentions in his State of the Union. And I have no idea what he intends to address in the State of the Union. But I think he wants to try to, if not elevate the debate, elevate thinking and get people talking about some of the other issues that are important to the
sure, country. Sure. Bob, let's
you I have great respect and friendship for Todd, who's both, as I say, a colleague and a friend. But I think his interpretation of reaching out an olive branch with respect to the first administration is categorically wrong. I think in all fairness, the president won. And the Republicans, at least in the short term, are not in a very good position just to be negative. So I think you've seen two major victories for the president. One on the fiscal cliff negotiation, and the other with regard to the debt ceiling. In the first one on fiscal cliff, he gave up nothing in terms of debt reduction, and essentially got the first increase in taxes in 20 years in the United States. Didn't quite get all that he wanted, because he found out, to his surprise, that $250,000 didn't quite make you a multimillionaire or billionaire. And with regard to the debt ceiling, issue, the Republicans read the tea leaves and were told this was a loser for them in the short term.
Yeah, and with that issue of the debt ceiling, let's kind of, and I want to, if we can, squeeze in some a little bit of politics here, but one policy matter that really is pressing, that's the debt ceiling. And with what the Republicans in the House have just done, it's kind of given this a new life, whether it's a life support or just new life completely. Is there a chance for this fiscal dilemma to be resolved before we reach the deadline again? Steve, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that it was tactically a very good thing for the Republicans to put off the debt ceiling issue for a few months. But I think that there doesn't seem the issue that's going to crop up first is the sequester, and I have a sense that we are moving towards some kind of a confrontation on the sequester. The spending cut issue is so key to the position of certainly a majority of the House Republicans. I think we've got a very difficult couple of months ahead on that. But I do think it was good to put the debt ceiling issue behind us, because even if you can argue with the merits of some of the positions people were taking about how we were going to go into default and and that there would be no way to pay our bills, and we'd lose our credit rating, especially given how little impact there was after the last downgrade. I think that the rhetoric was bad for the Republicans, and the press was bad for the Republicans. So I think it was smart of Boehner and the leadership to push it.
Vince, you follow these issues closely in your practice. Did you have an opinion that is different, or do you see this playing out differently?
No, I concur. I think that politically, if you want to just interject the politics on top of the substance there, that the Republicans sort of look like they're in disarray right now, so the president's going to keep pushing as hard as he can, even with these deadlines that are being set up in the House or have been set up in the House, in a way that I think he's going to end up, he's favored to have a winning outcome, or look like he has a winning outcome. So, I think the Republicans need to look at a different type of strategy than setting up the deadlines to force things. And but I think they're evolving, and they're going to figure it out. I think the problem that they do
the
have in this situation.
Republicans are evolving. It's good, yeah.
But the problem that the Republicans have is that the Obama administration has made a decision to keep its campaign apparatus going to push certain votes, and they may think that they can find themselves 20 or 30 votes in the House to come along with them on certain things. And clearly the rules, won't allow them to actually do that, in that procedure. But I do think that their machine is flying right now still at a very high level as far as operationally, and they're going to keep it going, and they're really going to try to use that to push as hard as they can on an opposition that's still regrouping after a battle they lost.
Yeah, Bob, as a Republican, are you evolving on this issue? Where are you?
Well, it's interesting. I do think the Republicans are evolving in one sense. I mean, they, I think, will come to the conclusion, for example, on immigration, that if they don't come up with some kind of positive alternative, that they're going to continue to lose the Latino vote. Senator Rubio has come up with a Republican plan that I personally believe mirrors a lot of what the Democrats want to accomplish. The big problem for the Republicans are the 11 million people who are already in the United States, and the Democrats obviously want to create a path to citizenship. But the Republicans don't really know how to deal with that quite yet. But I think in that sense they're evolving. One of the other issues that the president talked about in his speech was gay marriage. And I don't think that's going to be a legislative issue so much as a Supreme Court decision, which I anticipate is upcoming shortly.
Right.
So I think that gets resolved. And my gut, I really believe that the Supreme Court, considering what's happening in many of the states, will probably support the concept and allow that to move forward as well. So that's another victory for the president.
Yeah, we got about a minute before we have to go to break, and I want to get one political item out there. So just a very quick 10, 15 seconds from each of you, and Todd, we'll start with you. Midterm elections. Democrats have a chance, or will take the House back?
Have a chance.
Have a chance.
I think things have to continue to go well for the president, and the evolution that Bob just referred to, evolution denotes change. I don't think they've changed. I think they just recognize that they can't push the agenda that they'd like to push.
Steve?
The Democrats have a chance, but not a high one. The redistricting math, I think, makes it difficult.
Agreed.
Small chance.
Small with a lowercase s?
Yeah, a 25% chance. I mean, the question is, how do you win back these moderate suburban districts that the president couldn't bring to the party at this, with his operation in 2012? In 2014, when he's not on the ballot, especially when you're going to have to interject issues they're going to have to deal with, they're going to be divisive, like gun control, and potentially immigration reform that cuts both ways in these suburban districts.
Yep, Bob, last few seconds.
Agreed. I mean, has a chance, but at this point, because of redistricting and because of issues like gun control and immigration, it's 25% is an accurate response.
All right, guys, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to having y'all, as always. We'll head to break now. And if you've got the flu or you're worried about the flu, you're going to want to hear this next segment. Thanks so much. Come back.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than four decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
If you find yourself under the Klieg lights of a government investigation, you want experience on your side. Patton Boggs has 46 years of it. We've handled some of the biggest white-collar crime cases. Put that experience to work for you.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
From Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
Welcome back to Capital Thinking. I am Brett Boyles, your fill-in host for Kevin O'Neill today. And as we finish our last segment, I said, you want to listen to this next one if you've got the flu or worried about the flu. But the truth is, I don't have a doctor on here, but we've got Marty Kendrick. Marty is a partner of Patton Boggs Healthcare Group and has played a key role, really, in building a nationally recognized health law practice and works with so many clients across the country. Marty, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Brad. Delighted to be here.
Yeah. Marty, let's just get into it. The president has really laid out some big expectations for his healthcare reform in this second term of office. And I think a lot of questions that people have asked me, something that I've wondered myself is, will the Health Care Act be fully in effect by the time the president leaves office?
Well, the health care reform law, the Affordable Care Act, will largely be in place by the time the president leaves office, although I think it's fair to say that the administration will continue to face many challenges with respect to implementation along the way. Republicans are in Congress are really still licking their chops to have some retrenchment. I think that we're looking at sort of a steady menu of cuts and potential options for striking some key provisions in the statute. So I think over the course of the president's second term, we're still going to see a lot of challenges. That said, beginning this year, the Medicaid payments to primary care physicians are going to increase to at least 100% of the Medicare payments. There are national pilot programs that are going to take effect this year, encouraging doctors and hospitals and other providers to work together to improve coordination in a big demo pilot program called bundling. Also this year, the states are going to receive two more years of funding to continue their coverage for children who are not eligible for Medicaid through the CHIP program. And you've got, probably most importantly, the open enrollment for the exchanges, which are really the health insurance marketplaces, if you will, begins on October 1st, 2013. It's going to be very interesting to see how this pans out and if the state's exchanges will stand up. There's a fair amount of skepticism that the Department of Health and Human Services can be ready, and much less, the states. A lot of states sat back, and the governors wanted to wait until after the Supreme Court decision first and then the election to see if, in fact, they had to expend the resources to get the state exchanges up and ready. And, a default provision is that the federal government jumps in if they don't. So, I think we're going to see a lot of activity in 2013 and 14 specifically. Just to get back to, close the loop on your question, I mean, there is still, there are a couple of provisions that take effect in 2016, which will be an election year, obviously, again. And then one provision that is potentially pretty contentious, a tax on the high-cost insurance, the Cadillac plans, if you will, doesn't take effect until 2018. So I think it's fair to say the president is going to leave office likely with less than full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, but still very much significant progress and significant implementation should be behind the country at the point that he does leave office.
Yeah, in your answer, you mentioned some challenges, and I guess there are both political and administrative challenges that Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, is going to face, and really maybe touch on both of those two things, some of the political and some of the administrative challenges that are going to be facing the Obamacare.
Sure. The political challenge that is probably key is that, if the states decide to opt in and expand, if they, play ball, and particularly the expansion of the new Medicaid provisions, and if the states decide that they're going to cover Medicaid enrollees, this is going to be Medicaid is the largest budget item for many, many states, and states are, unlike the federal government, really have to balance their budget, have to balance their checkbook.
Sure,
so,
sure.
States might face challenges of having to cut back on education or other costs in order to fund Medicaid expansion. So, that promises to be, a real political hot potato for the next couple of years. In a process and technical sense, the successful operation of the health insurance marketplace, the exchanges, it's a completely new concept. I mean, there's the federal government, the federal health benefits program, but you know, lots of states do not have experience in administering competing programs for insurance offerings. So whether or not they will be able to mount successful operations, I think, is a question, a technical question. There's also a lot of uncertainty in the healthcare sector at this point concerning payment, adequate payment for physicians. There are taxes that will be faced under the healthcare reform statute, including the medical device tax. There are taxes on employer plans. There are a lot of practical and technical challenges that may look like technical questions and process questions at the front end, but certainly have the potential of turning into political hot potatoes as implementation moves forward of the new statute.
Well, so that leads to an obvious question. I mean, we've talked about now the political and the administrative the challenges. You've talked about the uncertainty, but at what point do these challenges? Where are the solutions? When is the uncertainty abated and people know what they're dealing with and there are real answers out there?
Well, the exchanges, when they're up and running, are going to help cover the uninsured and the underinsured. I mean, the states will have the ability to partner with the federal government to run the exchanges, or, you know, they can leave it up to the federal government to run an entire state exchange, and the state simply stays on the sideline. I mean, either choice gives some resolution or some solution to the obstacles. I think what's really going to be challenging is to look down and look forward into the healthcare system is undergoing change. Some of it is rapid change, some of it is smaller change. And I think that although the healthcare reform statute did not fell short in lots of respects on healthcare delivery reform, what the marketplace is doing is really jumping in and trying to solve some of those problems. One of the biggest problems, for example, that begs for a solution is keeping people out of emergency rooms and by providing primary care in order to reduce healthcare expenditures. And the reduction of healthcare expenditures, keeping people well, turning the incentives in the healthcare system inside out so that, you know, people are rewarded for prevention and wellness as opposed to, you know, motivating doctors and hospitals to continue to expand services. That kind of change is really underway. We've got an accountable care demonstration activity being funded by the federal government, which is going to impact many, many communities across the country. And we have other demonstration projects that, you know, are going to get rolled out in this next year. So I think the solutions are in process.
That's great. Martin, let me ask you this, but really with what's going to happen right now with the fiscal negotiations, we're talking about tax restructuring, what will happen to entitlement care in the course of all these debates and conversations?
Well, I think most of Washington observers and players are very convinced that entitlements will be very much in the mix for the fiscal renegotiations and tax restructuring that we're all looking toward this year. I mean, the changes to Medicare and Medicaid are going to be imminent. I think you've got the speaker, and I know you talked about this in the other section, but you know, there's a position on the Republican side that the increase there's a lot of concern about the debt, and there's concern on the Democratic side that if the debt limit is increased, you've got to come up with some matching dollar for dollar spending cut.
Yes.
I think when we see the president's budget come out on February 12th, it's going to be replete with a blueprint of additional health care cuts, including primarily Medicare cuts. I mean, last budget had over $400 billion in health care cuts. And certainly those were on the table again in the fiscal cliff negotiations. So I think the Republicans will continue to seek dollar-for-dollar entitlement spending cuts to as we go into the future debt ceiling debates. I mean, we might have a Band-Aid over the next couple of months, but that's not an issue that's going to go away. We also have a MedPAC, the advisory committee to Congress, will be coming up with its recommendations with a major report in March. So entitlement cuts are going to be in the mix, and everyone's gearing for that.
Marty, I've got about 20 seconds left, but quickly, where can folks find you if they've got questions about legal or policy advice and counsel they need to help really navigate through all these changes in healthcare policy?
Pattenbox has a very excellent healthcare team that we are immersed in the details. We understand the implementation of the statute. We've been sort of present at creation and very engaged. My phone number is 202-457-6520. It's mkendrick@pattenbox.com. We have a team of folks here who would be very happy to respond to any questions and jump in and help people out there with their issues and challenges.
Marty, thanks for joining us on a really great topic right now. We're headed to break. If you were going to Mexico on spring break, you're going to want to listen to this next segment. Marty, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad. Take care.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
What's your name worth? The loss of a single patent, trademark, or copyright can cost millions. Make sure your intellectual property is protected. Trust Patton Boggs to manage and protect your most important assets.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hola. Konnichiwa.
Bonjour.
Hello.
From Anchorage to Abu Dhabi.
Marhaba.
From Denver to
Hello.
Doha.
Ciao.
Patton Boggs makes Nico. Business transactions the world over.
Oi.
Rely on our insights for your next deal. Patton Boggs, the international business team. Straight, unfiltered, Patton Boggs.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattenboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattenboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
Welcome back to Capital Thinking. Brett Boyle sitting in for Kevin O'Neill. I ended the last segment by saying if you're going to Mexico on spring break, you want to listen to this segment. And no, this is not about a great cruise. But if you're traveling abroad, you need to listen to our next guest, Frank Samolas. Frank's a partner here at Patton Boggs. And Frank, you advise clients on matters related to international trade, policy, and you do some issues for sovereign representation. So, Frank, thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Brett, and Happy New Year to you.
To you, too. Thank you very much. Let's just get into this, Frank. President Obama has effectively ended the war in Iraq and is in the process of ending the war in Afghanistan. These are going to conclude his list of legacies on foreign policy, yes or no? Your thoughts?
Well, I think they conclude legacies that he inherited, and he's happy to get rid of or to wind down. But I think if he's going to have a successful legacy, Brett, he needs to do more in his second term. And by more, I'm thinking about China in particular and his pivot to Asia, and also addressing the lingering problems in the Middle East. There's a lot that's left to be done internationally. And I think if you're looking at it from a bright side, winding down those wars, which are increasingly unpopular, are a good way for him to focus on other things as an international legacy.
Well, so much of the talk that you hear from both the right and the left with regard to the president and his foreign policy is projecting American power internationally, in a non-military sense, I mean. And really in the next 4 years or 2 years that he becomes a lame duck, what does he have to do to project that power internationally?
Well, remember, part of the power is economic power, and the U.S. is slowly coming out of this recovery. I think one of the things he has been doing but needs to do more of is to engage in international agreements that open up trade. Remember back in the last State of the Union, he talked about doubling U.S. exports.
He did.
In 5 years. He's close to doing that, but I think he's going to need some help, Brett. And he's doing it now by entering into these TPP negotiations, which are the Trans-Pacific Partnership, basically 11 countries from Asia and Latin America working together to open up trade. And now he's going to be doing it with a free trade agreement with Europe, which we hope to see being announced sometime in the near future.
Well, let's talk about those two things particularly. In terms of trade, what can we expect when the U.S. enters talks with the EU and the next round of the TPP talks?
Well, let me take the last one first. On the TPP, we can expect that we will have the Obama administration will like to conclude talks by the end of the year. I'm not sure they will, but they'll make a lot of progress. And we're now talking about a free trade area that would include not just the U.S., Mexico, Canada, Chile, Peru, but also Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, Vietnam, Brunei. So you've got a very robust area, which I think reinforces his broader strategy of pivoting to Asia. Mm-hmm. Now, the European agreement will be much different and much more important for different reasons. The real issue there isn't so much trade and merchandise. The tariffs are pretty low as they are, but I think it's going to be services, professional services, international finance, internet trade, things like that that will really be cutting edge. And the European-U.S. trade relationship is extremely strong. This is a way for the U.S. to really help itself through exports and also help the EU economy recover.
Well, let me go back, if I may, to the first question I asked you with regards to foreign policy on the war front, and
yep.
And bring this into the topic that is really on the front burner here in Washington, and that's the issue of sequestration. And it's looking more and more realistic. And with sequestration, we're looking at military spending being just, I mean, curtailed in a large way. Well, because of this cutback that's now looming, are we going to see less U.S. involvement in conflicts abroad? Do you think that makes a difference?
Well, Brett, it's a good question. I think you're going to see less boots on the ground, that's for sure. What you probably will see is a continuation of drone strikes. I know that's a controversial topic, and it's taking criticism from the left and the right, but remember, the big benefit of drones is that they don't put American troops in harm's way. They have been the tool of choice for this administration, taking out militants outside of Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think the CIA, as well as the military, has acknowledged direct action beyond Iraq and Afghanistan, most recently in Yemen, just yesterday with the 6 terrorists killed. So you'll see that there. You'll see it in Somalia. You'll see it in the Maghreb. It's a way of reinforcing American power, but without the exposure to American troops.
Yeah, and there's a lot of debate relating to the drone program itself, and I'd like to get if you've got a view on that. But and one of the things that people talk about with the drone program is the transparency. Is it appropriate? And should the U.S. be selling used ones to countries that are prone to conflict? There's just a lot going on about around the drone debate. I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, there sure is. I mean, it's obviously a controversial issue, and when people start talking about kill lists, that gets people's attention,
sure,
particularly on Capitol Hill. I think the thing to understand is that, number one, the preparation of targets is not done willy-nilly. There is a very formal interagency process that involves the CIA and the military for engaging in the use of drones, number one. So I think there's a little bit of overreaction in terms of how they are being used and how much ought to be shared. I think the bigger concern is what happens to these weapons when they get into the hands of others. You look at Syria, and I don't know if anybody is fully aware of who are the good guys in the Syrian opposition and who are the bad guys.
Yeah.
But we really need to put in place whatever we can to guarantee that the bad guys don't get the drones.
Well, and I don't think we're going to resolve this debate on this show, not with the time that we've got. But
we still have 2 minutes.
We've got a few minutes. It is a debate that continues in the U.S. and one that even I've got friends at the CIA and FBI and especially the CIA. They've got their own views on the use of drone program, and so it's almost a nonpartisan issue. It becomes more of a philosophical issue, I think, on the drones. Would you agree?
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. I don't think this is a divisive issue between Republicans and Democrats. I think it's really putting drones in the context of exactly how you put the question, Brett. How do you project American power? For me, I look out on the bright side and saying, you know, projecting power doesn't necessarily mean putting 19-year-old kids in harm's way.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. Frank, North Korea just announced its intentions to carry out really high-level nuclear tests that's intended to aim at the U.S. How should the president approach this threat?
Yeah, that's troubling to me. Remember, in that statement from North Korea, they said that they're stepping up their threats against the U.S., which it calls its sworn enemy. Now, that came a day after, as you know, the U.N. Security Council agreed to the U.S.-backed resolution to censure North Korea for that rocket launch they did last month that broke U.N. rules. But there are some other conflicting signals going on. Remember, Mrs. Park has just been elected the new president of South Korea. She was elected last month. On New Year's Day, North Korea sent out some feelers that were quite peaceful to the new president of South Korea. So we've got to be vigilant, obviously, but I think, like a lot of times, North Korea is sending a bunch of mixed signals.
Well, what role will China play in all this?
China, I come back to what I said at the beginning, where we need to engage with China more. Xi Jinping has been China's new leader for over 2 months now. Mr. Obama has not yet even met him. Remember when the new president of France, right after being elected, visited Angela Merkel the next day. Mr. Xi's going to be around for a long time. He'll be around for the rest of Obama's administration. He'll be around 6 years after that. So we need to have more summits with China. We need to keep them engaged. We need to address the South China Sea issue with them. We have a whole host of trade issues. And I think there needs to be a high-level summit soon between Obama and Mr. Xi.
Frank, we've got a couple minutes left. Let's a really current event. We're going to have a new Secretary of State. We saw Secretary Clinton yesterday on the news at both Senate and House hearings. Do you see, I can't imagine, but I would welcome your opinion on will Senator Kerry have any trouble getting through the Senate, and what do you think challenges will face him if and when he does?
Well, you're right, Brett. I can't imagine Senator Kerry having any problems going before his own committee for confirmation. And I think he's obviously a well-respected and well-seasoned individual who has international name recognition, and I don't want to trivialize it, but that counts for a lot, kind of a celebrity Secretary of State to a lot of parts of the world that like a brand name, if you will. So that will help him, but I think he's inheriting a lot of problems. We've got tremendous problems in the Middle East and what happens in countries like Syria and what's going to continue to happen in Libya and Egypt. So I'm pretty confident Secretary Kerry will do a very competent job in his new role.
Frank, we've got about 45 seconds left. Briefly give us really what your practice group is working on right now, and if folks need some help in this area, where can they find you?
Well, thanks so much. We are engaged very actively on these TPP negotiations for a number of clients, including some sovereign nations. We're beginning to get involved in the U.S.-EU talks. Now is the time for the private sector to get involved and raise issues with our negotiators. The process is just beginning. We are here at 2550 M Street in Washington. My direct dial number is 202-457-5244. As you know, we have a very good professional team of trade specialists, former ambassadors, former members of Congress, all of whom lend tremendous credibility and competence to our foreign policy team.
Frank, as always, we appreciate you. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks so much, Brett. Good talking to you.
You too. We're headed to break, and if you are buying a new hot water heater very soon, you want to stick around for our next guest. Thanks so much, Frank.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Interrogatories.
Prima facie.
Pleadings.
Motion for summary judgment.
E-discovery.
Affirmative defense.
Stipulations.
Ex parte.
Amicus brief.
Subpoena.
Litigation is confusing. Trust the litigation team at Patton Boggs to make sense of it all.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
From K Street to Wall Street to LaSalle Street, the Patton Boggs team knows how to pull off big business transactions. Come hear what we know. Patton Boggs covers the world.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than four decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
Brett Boyle sitting in for Kevin, slave to fashion, O'Neill. Welcome back. Josh Green is joining us. Josh Green, aptly named, because Josh, you're a partner at Patton Boggs, and you focus on the practice of energy and environmental policy, particularly with an emphasis on alternative and renewable energy. And I kind of led into this segment by saying if you're buying a new hot water heater, you want to stick around to listen to Josh. Josh, you were part of a team recently, and we've got some changes coming to the metrics on hot water heaters. Is that correct?
That's correct, Brett. And, you know, moreover, thanks for having me on, and look forward to our discussion. Yes, we at the firm represent North America's largest manufacturer, actually, of commercial and residential water heating equipment. And we were able, after a three-year effort, to get federal legislation passed that will help clarify not only the energy efficiency descriptors that water heating equipment under the Energy Star program uses, but also the test methodologies that the Department of Energy and some other agencies use to come up with those efficiency standards. Not as sexy as some of the other issues out there, but certainly for this cohort of manufacturers, it's a big win. And it also will help consumers. Those folks who need to replace or are looking to buy a new water heater will be able to, for the first time in many, many years, actually do an apples-to-apples comparison amongst manufacturers.
Well, congratulations. And speaking of sexier environmental issues, in the president's inaugural address, he showed a little leg, or a lot of leg, in pinpointing climate change.
Mm.
What specific actions do you foresee being taken by the administration on climate change, and really, and how are we going to deal with that, and with the views that we know where the Senate and the House are on that?
Right. No, and a great question, Brett. I think, you know, climate change, and whether that one puts that in quotes, and depending upon what lens you are looking through, has
a green lens for the purpose of this conversation.
Yes, has all different kinds of permutations. But on the broader issue of global climate change and what we are doing related to lowering the use of fossil fuels, or certainly fuels with high carbon content in our economy and around the world, certainly this is something that President Obama campaigned on as in his first campaign for the presidency, and made a point of trying to move forward to a cleaner energy economy in the first term, and I think he will continue that in the second term. But I think, you know, what it relates to climate change, and one of the underlying reasons why this was raised was as a result of the devastation of Hurricane Sandy that hit the East Coast, and the amount of time, almost weeks and months in some circumstances, where people were without electricity, hot water, amongst other things. And there was certainly in New York and New Jersey, there was a rethinking going on about the energy complex, the infrastructure, and how energy is generated and distributed, and doing things on a more reliable basis, and using concepts like distributed generation, as we say in the industry, which is, you know, anything from solar panels on your roof to a small, you know, gas generator, if you're at a school or something like that. This is something that the president and his team are committed to doing. I think there are a lot of great steps that were made in the first term. We know about the legislative debacle that happened with the broader climate bill. I don't, at this point in time, foresee such an ambitious initiative happening on Capitol Hill, as you alluded to, Brett. There are some differences of opinions on many issues, including this one. Certainly we are looking very closely at what the regulatory agencies are doing, and certainly what the president can do vis-a-vis executive order.
Yeah, and Josh, this is one of the issues in Washington, D.C., that really touches all three branches of the government. I mean, you're talking about regulatory issues from the executive side. You're talking about the debate continuing to rage in Congress on both sides of the aisle. And then you've got this thing's going to, you know, there are court cases, you know, popping up constantly over the implementations that the executive branch is taking. And the president's first term, he tried that, but he went back and kind of focused on the economy. That was really a focus. But Do you think this can be as big a piece of his administrative agenda as, say, health care was, considering, as you really described it, the debacle that occurred, or is this going to be administered through executive order?
Well,
and regulatory and
yeah. My take on it at this moment in time is that we will see additional rulemakings specifically from the Environmental Protection Agency as well as the Department of Interior related to energy policy across the entire complex, both fossil, natural gas, oil, as well as renewables. There may be some executive orders in the offing in the second term. They would probably be a little bit more limited in scope because during the first term, President Obama did issue Executive Order 13514, which was a sweeping executive order related to lowering the federal government's overarching greenhouse gas footprint.
Yep.
And this hits every branch of government, and there are many different initiatives that are still ongoing related to those who buy and sell services to the federal government being impacted. And, of course, the federal government in and of itself is the single largest buyer of energy and user of energy in our country, and they are beginning to lower their, you know, GHG emissions with the procurement of alternative energy. So I'm anticipating, and many of us are anticipating in the industry, excuse me, that there will be continued rulemaking, continued executive branch initiatives related to what otherwise, you know, the Obama administration would term as the transition to a cleaner energy economy. Having said that, I do anticipate as well that our friends on Capitol Hill will engage certainly in energy policy and the various permutations thereof. I don't think we're going to see we're not going to see a climate bill per se.
Yeah.
We may not even see a sweeping energy bill like we saw in 2005. So I do think with some additional oversight, perhaps there will be some smaller bills that percolate on Capitol Hill that may send the requisite signal to the private sector. But generally speaking, at least for these next 2 years, the 113th Congress, I think energy policy is mostly going to be made in the executive branch.
Well, I'll put it this from a market perspective, Josh, and is financial confidence increasing in the green technology industry, or really what needs to be done to avoid more Solyndra's?
Yeah, well, you know, and Solyndra in and of itself is a case study, and probably we could talk about that for another half hour or so. But you know, the one impact that that is happening now in the energy complex that affects what I otherwise would term clean tech, green tech, or you know, energy technology 2.0, of course, is the abundance of natural gas and oil from the shale deposits in and around the country. And this has been a market driver to change the economics of many of the investments that were otherwise made in renewable energy technologies and clean energy technologies. Now, that's not to say that the investment will stop. It is curtailed a little bit coming out of the recession. But certainly the abundance of natural gas that we have in the United States is having an impact on investment decisions. So while big solar investments or wind investments may still occur, some of them are, you know, a little less in vogue, I do think there will be continued investments in what I'll call a clean tech or clean web applications, energy efficiency, smart grid, anywhere where you have the ability to increase efficiencies and take pressure off balance sheets, OPEX for industry. So we'll see. In the end, I think these technologies have their place. Everybody recognizes that. And in Washington, I would say for the energy complex, one thing that they would like, just like many people would like on financial matters, is some business certainty.
Exactly. Josh, I hate to interrupt you. We've got to go. Real quick, where can folks find you who have more questions about this?
Oh, sure. We can find me on the Pattenbaugh's website. My direct dial is 202-457-5204. Email jgreen, that's with an E on the end, at pattenbaugh's.com, and
I look forward to talking to
Josh, we'll get you back because there's a lot of questions about this moving forward. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks
to everyone listening out there on your iPads, on your iPhones, on your Sony Walkmans as you're out there exercising right now. To Capital Thinking, again, I'm Brett Boyle sitting in for Kevin O'Neill. Kevin O'Neill will be back with you next week, I believe. And until then, if you're on your bike tonight, remember to wear white. Thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us for Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. We hope to have you join us again for more insight from Washington. We're here every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network.